night of total terror.
Singing at two different parts. I think we now owe the guy who wrote the MASH theme $2,000 for the likeness of it.
Yeah, have you ever heard the lyrics to the MASH theme?
No. Tell
me. It is. Hold on. Give me 5 seconds. I'm gonna.
You have three. Right, you have three.
Okay, it's loaded right now. Here it is.
Okay. It's called Suicide is Painless, right?
Yeah, it's called Suicide is Painless. And it's, I realize and I can see that suicide is painless. It brings on many changes. And I can take or leave it if I please.
Ellen Alda. Yes, Ellen Alda's funny.
I think so.
But it's just like, it's about suicide. It's
yeah.
It's a weird song.
It's probably the most depressing song you could possibly pick for what I would consider one of the funniest sitcoms of the 70s. You know what I mean?
But it's about war, though, too. I mean, you think about it, right?
Which might kind of cast that that reality check for the viewers that though this show is intended to be funny and remember they are at war and war is not funny.
Yeah, exactly.
But it can be.
You can have Klinger in a dress.
Klinger, yeah. yeah. Brilliant. It was funny for like an episode or two. Then after a while, it just got, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It kind of lost its funny to me. But
So we've been gone for a while, haven't
yes.
we?
Yes.
Yes. I've been a little busy.
Well, I've been too. But first, we're going to start with you. Because okay. I feel like this is mostly your fault.
My fault. Yeah.
Well, what's happened to you the last couple months, man?
I bought a house.
Nice.
So that's
and not
the thing.
Like you bought like three houses so you can build motels.
No.
Oh, so it took you 4 months to buy a house? No.
I bought a house and I've been moving and getting stuff together. Actually, I stopped painting to come and record, sit down and record with you.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people, unless you've bought a house, you don't quite understand how much fucking time goes into buying a house. And then once you get there, it's not like, hey, we're ready. Now life happens. It's like, no. You need to get this house. I mean, you could just leave it, but there's a feeling of like, I want to get the house
into like some kind of
living mode. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's more like yours and stuff like that. Yeah.
Agreed. Agreed. And yeah, I mean, we're 5 years in and we're still doing that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But
well, then so, at the same time, we had just applied for our mortgage and we share a car. Melissa and I share a car between the two of us because I usually ride the bus to work. So we only need one car.
Nice.
And as soon as we like put in the official application for the mortgage, our car died.
So, what?
Yeah. Oh, so we had to get a car, but we couldn't just go apply for a car loan and get a new car because we just paid for a mortgage. So there was like, and so we couldn't do that. And but then so we went and bought a car from a friend, you know, just like a $500, like it's a Volvo wagon, like, you know, pretty cool. But and it's in good condition, but it had problems with it. And so we've been working on that too, like just to get that in like driving order. I mean, it'll be fine. Yeah. Like we're driving around today. It's cool. But yeah, so that's been like another thing like on my plate. And it's like we're trying to avoid spending too much money on it. So like my cousin was coming over and helped me with it, you know, like do some work on it and stuff too. So that's like the other big thing.
Well, cheers to mortgage payments and being in debt for the rest of your life. Ding.
But When people keep saying that to me, they're like, oh, it's such a big thing, you're going to spend money on it for the rest of their life. It's like, yeah, but at least it's not a rent check. Or a rent check.
Oh, yeah.
Here's $700. I might as well just burn it. You know, it's like, agreed. It goes to nothing.
I hear that too from friends who live in apartments. I think that's their way of dealing with the fact that they can't buy a house. And I get that, you know, but I mean, your house is equity. It's value. Your money is going into the walls of your house and not just into somebody else's pocket.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Well, even the other thing that too, like the reason that like it started me thinking about buying a house is it's actually not that much to own a house these days. At least I didn't think it was. I mean, we went up a little higher than what we were paying in rent before, but we were finding places that would have been, the mortgage would have been the same as what we were paying in rent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Our because we've been here for 5 years and we've done some improvements and we've done some things to the house, but because we've put the time into the house, our mortgage is now less than when we had a 2-bedroom townhouse. So because we have a 4-bedroom house and an acre of land, it's now cheaper than we lived in a 2-bedroom townhouse without a garage, you know, and off-street parking. Yeah. Granted, we live in Onalaska, Wisconsin, but you know,
but it's still, I mean, apartments are just as expensive. You know, like you got to look at it like, you know, an apartment in Onalaska and a house in Onalaska is gonna be the same kind of jump as an apartment in Milwaukee and a house in Milwaukee.
Agreed. Yeah. What does a 2-bedroom a townhouse or apartment in Onalaska would probably run you about $700 to $1,000, maybe $1,000 at the high. The high end would be 1,000. Mm-hmm. What would it run in Milwaukee? What would be the turnover?
That's about the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't be that much more expensive. Nice. Yeah, right. depending on where you go though, too.
Right.
I mean, there's the nicer neighborhoods and stuff. The neighborhood I live in is kind of like they call it a transitional neighborhood, so it's a little bit like kind of more college kids, but then a little bit more hood. Two at the same time, so it's a little bit of mixture.
Okay, you're like right on the edge of both of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so did we talk the last time about your Rock and Roller remote controller release?
Yes, I believe that was like our last show. It was like I was falling asleep because I hadn't slept at all.
That's right. That's right. Oh my god. So how have you rebounded from that? Is the next Rock and Roller ready to go, or are you kind of
taking
a breath actually?
Yeah, well, the other big thing that's been happening too is we're moving studios as well.
Oh,
so we're out of our old studio. I just got a call from the landlord last week though. Even though we're moved out, we still have to go back in there and paint still.
Really?
Otherwise he's going to charge us for it, so we just decided to go do it.
Right.
You know. But it's just like, it's one big wall needs to be painted. And so it's just like, with rollers, just run and do it really quick. And
$30 gallon of primer and just throw it on there.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. So that's kind of annoying, but yeah. So that's like the big thing is like, we haven't done anything lately because we've had to get out of our old place.
Right. So you're going to start. Now that summer is kind of settling down, you guys are going to start getting together pretty quick and start brainstorming the next one?
I mean, we still get together every week, but it's mostly been like organizing and getting stuff back in place. But we still we'll talk about what we want to do. There's some ideas, bands we've been talking to for the next episode.
Cool.
You know, that's kind of always like the first part of it. We have to figure out who's going to be in the episode, and then we can kind of write around that. Because we have to write around the idea of the music videos usually.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you find, how challenging is that? I mean, basically what you're doing is probably, it sounds like you're writing around the conclusion. Like you're given a conclusion or the parts of it and they have to somehow come together. It's almost like you're writing backwards.
A little bit.
Is that
fairly
accurate?
It depends on the band. I mean, some bands will come right away with an idea and we can work with that, or we'll present them with an idea, something that will kind of work towards our story. I don't know. I don't do a lot of the initial like brainstorming process. I'm usually the end guy, but I'm still involved in it a little bit. But,
right.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, cool, man.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, it's been pretty good. Nice. So that's been my summer. It's basically been that.
Cool.
Nothing else. Cool. What about you? What have you been up to?
Oh, well, in July, I played a couple shows that completely re-energized my passion for trying to do stand-up and musical comedy together. Yeah, there was a run of like four or five shows I played that just... I think part of it was the audience, and part of it was the show I had set up. I think my original 60 minutes I had set up, or 90 minutes, just wasn't... It was a good example of a first attempt. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was just... This is the first thing you've ever done by yourself creatively for the public to see, and you can't expect it to be very good. You don't want it to be very good because you want to have that creative feedback so you can improve upon your craft.
Exactly, yeah.
And yeah, so, but the problem was at the end of that road, which basically was this last spring with a final show I did at a cancer benefit that went really shitty. Mm-hmm. I felt completely just turned off. Like I felt like it wasn't going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. No one thought I was funny. People just, you know, there wasn't a good audience for it. I was making tons of excuses. In the end, I just wanted to be done with it. But mm-hmm. Along the way, I ended up writing a new set of material, ended up building in more stand up and storytelling.
Okay.
So I thought maybe the song, you're just trying to adjust it. Maybe the songs need a little bit more setup. And, I did a couple shows back in July at the Cavalier, and they just went spectacularly. Mm. And like
I got a question. What's the Cavalier?
Oh yeah, the Cavalier is this place in the Cross. It used to be just like a little lounge thing, but look, it shares the same space as what used to be the La Crosse Community Theater. But the La Crosse mm-hmm. Community Theater built a new building because they're expanding, and so the Cavalier bought the theater with the idea of they want to now create a local, instead of it being like stage and plays, it's going to be more like comedy and middle-sized venue shows.
Okay.
So it's a lounge connected to a nice little 200 seat theater.
Okay.
And since he bought it like back in January or something like that. But he had recently, which I'm really excited about, he saw he had Shane Moss come. Do you know who Shane Moss is? I know that's exactly what I did when I heard the name. I'm like, that name sounds so freaking familiar, yeah. But I can't pinpoint him. He's a stand-up comic who's he's just filming his first Comedy Central special.
Okay.
But he's done a couple Comedy Central Presents.
Okay.
And he's from Onalaska.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, he's local. Like, okay. My local. And I had no idea. Like a 98 graduate or something like okay. that. But he performed his last show before. He recently has been on Conan and Letterman a couple times.
Okay.
Like, this guy's got his chops. And he came back to La Crosse to perform one more show before he went to New York to film his special. Mm-hmm. And he filmed it at the he performed at the Cavalier, mm-hmm. and it was sold out. And he's just brilliant, mm-hmm. you know. He's so good, and it's fun to see a guy who knows how to work an audience and has so much material that he can riff off an audience and pick up. Okay, this joke is working. Keep going with it. This joke isn't working. Let's cut it. And move on.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's neat to see that locally. But anyway, so it was at the Cavalier Lounge. So he played there. 1 week, and then I got to play there the next week.
Okay.
So going into it, I'm like, oh, great. You know, this is what a hell of a step down from Shane Moss performing. And
but that might be a good – I mean, I would think that is a good thing. You know, I mean, I'm assuming there was a lot of people at the Shane Moss show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're
– it's sold out.
Yeah, so like a lot of people were like, oh, cool, I should go to more things here. And then like, oh, there's this guy Nick next week. Like, we should go to that, too.
Exactly. It definitely helped with attendance. I think what I was more nervous about was, like, oh, Christ, how do you follow up that guy? Mm. I mean, it's not really following up, but it's like he performed one weekend, and then I'm headlining the next weekend at the same place. So in a way, it's like, well, that's kind of following that guy up. But in the meantime, like, the night before, like, Willie Nelson played in town, too. and another guy named Wayne Hancock played in town, who's a really well-known blues guitarist, okay, or something like that. So there's a number of well-known acts that played in town that, like, that week in La Crosse was an amazing week for performing. So you had, like, if you were to do like an analogy, it'd be like, if you do like a baseball analogy, it would be like leading off, I don't know, you know, Babe Ruth, and batting second, Barry Bonds, mm-hmm, you know, and then batting third, me, would be like strikeout Nick Weak tits or something. You know what I mean? It had that feeling of like, oh my God, I wasn't really following up, but I mean, anyway, so, but it was all, what was exciting was it was all brand new material no one had ever really heard. Structure. Mm-hmm. Some of it people had heard here and there, but ended up going over just ridiculously well. Mm-hmm. And then I got asked to go back the next weekend, and I went back the next weekend and just hammered it home. And I finally had that first feeling of controlling a room, mm-hmm, where, okay, you know what, yeah, I mean? Yeah, like, you get people laughing, you can make eye contact, you're not just working off your notes, you're riffing with audience. And there was a fair number of people there that I knew that helped me feel comfortable, but there were a lot of people I didn't know, which is mm-hmm, different. And I mean, this comes from the perspective of somebody who's a novice to this profession, mm-hmm, but I definitely got the feeling of, like, you could see why people want to keep doing it. That feeling of, like, the laughter you get from an audience when you control a crowd is almost, it's infectious. Mm-hmm. It's addicting. And I don't know. It was such an amazing 2 weeks to be performing. And the great thing was that, like, some of the adjustments I made actually worked. Like, I did longer setups for the going into the, okay, songs, and that pulled people into the songs a little bit more. I didn't have to maintain attention for 10 minutes at a time in a song. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, like I alluded to before about, like, if people don't like a song, well, strap in, because it's fucking 5 minutes, yeah, of a song, whether you like it or not. The great thing about breaking it up a little bit was I could finish the song, or if I found it wasn't working, I could cut it off at a logical point, mm-hmm, segue it into the next thing, and do like a little talking segment. So, mm-hmm, just, yeah, it went so well. I needed to share it with somebody. You know, I came home and my wife's like, oh, that's nice, what do you want for dinner? And I was like, oh, okay. So, yeah, I was so proud of the fact that I nailed it. And, you know, it doesn't happen.
That's awesome.
Very often.
That's awesome. So, who else was there other people there, or was there other performers?
No, that was part of it was I had 2 hours I needed to fill because there were Saturday night shows. Okay. And, I only had 90 minutes worth of stuff. And one of the things I've read about is that, look, if you're going to do stand-up comedy, not 60 minutes is about, yeah, the max that you can keep people's attention. You know, then people just, so I broke it up into two 45-minute sets. Okay. And then what I did was I had a nice 15-20-minute break in between. So then I almost treated it like it was two separate shows. Okay. So I had like a first 45 minutes and another 45 minutes. And that seemed to work really well. It almost gave people... Because sometimes when people do like an intermission, they do like 5 minutes, go, mm-hmm, take a piss, go get something to eat, or whatever. But I did a whole 20 minutes. It gave people an opportunity to finish their drink, talk, and then leave if they wanted, mm-hmm, to. But in that 20 minutes, a whole new audience of people came in. There was no cover charge.
Okay.
I mean, part of the allure. Yeah. I'll just walk in and watch this. I can't charge a cover. No one, mm-hmm, will come see me. But so then the second 45 minutes, I had almost an entirely new set of people in there, except for the small group of friends that are already drunk, mm-hmm, and watched the first set. So I had the luxury of doing like callback jokes where that group of people would laugh, and then explain the callback joke, and then getting the other people to laugh, and getting, it works so well where I could just, yeah, you know, it was such a perfect formula for the setting that I was in that it was going into it, I felt like if this sucks, I'm going to find something else to do. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to write any more songs. I'm just wasting my time. No one wants to fucking hear them. And so, but it was nice. It was really good.
Well, it's good to have those, like, kind of like breaths of fresh air after having like a, you know, a series of like bad bad stuff. I mean, because I mean, you're always gonna have bad shows. You know, yeah. I guess that's especially in comedy. It seems like that's always like you get stuck in a bad show with like some crappy people that came.
Oh yeah, you know, I watched over the summer. It's been a while now, but I watched the David Cross. He did a it wasn't a special.
So the one where he does
it, because they
is it
did
all
like
his bombings, or is it like, or yeah,
kind of yeah. They show a number of his bombings, but you get the what it was like seeing those things. You know, first of all, for him to film it and put it out there is such a ridiculous risk. But I'm so glad he did, because seeing that, because what he like his comedy was still funny no matter what venue he was in. The problem was that he was in the wrong place to deliver it. Like, one of his biggest bombings, I think, was in, I want to say, Montgomery, Alabama. Does that sound right? Montgomery. And, you know, it's Alabama. Yeah. It's deep
but
south.
But he's also from the south, though, too. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's southern. And he'll, like, he hates it, though, too. Like, yeah, I've heard him in interviews, and he hates being from the south. Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, you know, like, one show he did, some guy just kept yelling, but he wasn't yelling at anybody. He just kept going, woo, woo. He just kept doing it. And David Cross and he's trying to like riff with the guy like, all right, man, you're the fucking idiot who keeps yelling. Let's not be that guy anymore. Mm-hmm. And he tries to keep segueing the guy out of it, but the guy just kept going. And it just kept happening for like 20 minutes. And David Cross just keeps shaking his head, looking down like, I don't know what the hell to do. You guys all paid $20 to be here. Are you going to let that asshole ruin the show? And it just kept happening, you know. But I like the fact that it made me feel like, you know, you have sometimes the setting just has to be right. You know, you people have to know what they're getting into a comedy show. They have to know somewhat what they're going to be expecting. You can't walk into a cancer benefit following the guy who just played 12 hours of James Taylor and expect people to laugh at you, you know? And yeah, so anyway, that was my huge professionally, my huge summer moment of, validating what I'm doing.
That's good, yeah.
It segued into.
I would be upset if you stopped doing that.
Oh, thanks.
So, is that Cavalier Place doing more, like, shows in?
Yeah, they're, the guy who owns it is, remodeling the theater, and he's making a concerted effort to pull in more stand-up comedy. Like, right now, La Crosse has virtually no stand-up comedy. They have people that go to, a place called River Jack's. But the comics that go there are you never hear of any of them. Not that necessarily makes anybody better or worse, but it doesn't draw a crowd. You know what I mean? Like, if it's just they contract through a small agency in Wisconsin who just it's only Comedy Express is the people I talked to last year about possibly doing some stuff with, but they get a crop of like 50 comics, and then they just do a little circle around the Midwest, and they do a little map with, you know, with little push pins, and they just kind of circle around, and you just move to the next one, and then there's no stopping it. It's just when a push pin falls out, they just find a new push pin to put in there, and they just continue the circle going around.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So you might, in like 5 years, you might see the same stand-up comic come through 10 times. You know what I mean? And they might do the same show five times. Just because all they're doing is that's their job, is they work through Comedy Express and they just cycle from the cities to La Crosse to Dubuque to Chicago to Green Bay, you know. And it's just a big circle.
I don't know. So, have you ever thought of like maybe doing like, you know, working with that Cavalier Place and not, maybe not going through something like that and maybe just setting up some more. I come from the punk rock, the punk rock, you know, scene of just setting up your own shows and just, you know, getting, you know, start making friends with different comedians and stuff. And I mean, I'm sure like bring people in from Madison or, you know, I don't know where their like small comedians are, you know, like this, you know.
Right. You know, that's, you know, from the last show, a couple people who saw me play are starting a skit comedy group in lacrosse. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they call me and ask me, and Jason Robertson's one of them. You know, obviously I know Jason. but they call and ask to, we had the first informational meeting today about doing a stand-up. It's not stand-up comedy, obviously. It's skit comedy, but that would be something that, that is something that has come about because of the musical comedy stuff I've done. But that might end up being some type of regular thing. Like I've talked to the guy at the Cavalier about doing a regular set, like maybe doing some every month or every other month. But I don't know. Like there's something like now that I've played that 90 minutes at the Cavalier, I feel like. I did it two weekends in a row, and I feel like, God, if I go back there again, I'll just be jerking off in the same sock, you know? It's just like, there's got to be other socks out there. And so, I'm not playing a poor me card.
No, it's
make more of an effort to look into other places, but.
Well, it's kind of tough with your sets, too, because they are so lengthy. Like, it's not like you can just shop it around and be like, oh, I can just do 10 minutes here or 10 minutes at this place or drive out to Madison for tonight and do like a quick set somewhere and then come back.
Agreed. You know,
it's like a big production.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the music part is the comedy. The stand-up, the setups, they can't stand alone. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I could do some of the setup stuff before play the song. They're not good, but the setups are what make people laugh at the songs, if that makes sense. Like, you need one to have the other. So if I went there and I just did a setup and a song, that might work. But then it's like, wow, you just drove 3 hours to do 10 minutes of a set.
Yeah, that's,
I don't know. That's probably what I have to do at some point. But when I'm kind of energized to do this comedy troupe thing, not so much because of the performance. I might do like the music as like the transition while they're changing sets, but like just to, I'm more intrigued in enhancing my writing. You know what I mean? Like that is something that I want to try and find more creative grounds of doing is spending time thinking about, like right now when I write a song, I start with nothing and I have to find something to write about. But with this comedy troupe thing, there's always the possibility of like, hey, Nick, we have this setting. Would you write something around this? And I kind of like the idea of trying like that
collaboration
out.
More of a thing.
Yeah. But you know, like earlier you talked about some of your experiences with collaborating on these creative projects. How do you feel about that?
About collaborating?
Like when you, collaborating, not just collaborating usually is a good thing, but like on something that can be very personal and creative and.
Yeah, no, I know. It's a good thing and a bad thing sometimes. It's a good thing is that you can, if you get a good group of people that work well off of each other, you can get a lot of good stuff going. But.
Right.
I mean, sometimes it can be more who's just the loudest, you know? I mean, it's fine too, but it's so like, you know, sometimes it's like, it's kind of hard to get heard. I guess it depends on the group. Like sometimes, like if the group's really good, everybody works off each other and then it's great. I've had both, and in rock and roll, I've had both those experiences. So it's, you know, maybe it's dependent on the time of the year.
Do you have any, I want to share, like, I came from the informational meeting today, which is really interesting in itself, but before I get there, like, do you have any personal experiences you can share from your collaboration days that you wouldn't be, like, throwing anybody under the bus or being rude to anybody, but is there anything, any experiences that stand out where you're like, oh, man, that was really tough to get through, or I wish I would have done it differently?
Yeah, you know, the one for me, and I'm sure you probably run into this too, is like, I mean, and this can be true either with like comedy stuff or movie stuff or bands or anything like that. But it's just like everybody's geared to go. Like they have the informational meeting and then that's all it is. Mm-hmm. Like nothing happens from there. That's always the hard part. It's like everybody wants to do this, and then nobody like gets together with this. You know, like I mean, like right. for instance, our podcast. You're the only like I've talked to many people about doing podcasts before, and it's always fizzled. And that's why I was like so excited when we actually like started doing something. I'm like, hey, we're actually doing it.
That's funny because of all the things you could do, podcasting might be one of the easiest.
I threw on a shirt and came downstairs and started talking to you.
I had to pause on my painting. And what's great is that you can drink and get drunk during it. All you gotta do is press a button. What's this? You know, just a little red circle. All right.
What did you do this week?
Nothing. What did you do? 60 minutes later. Good job today.
High five. I'm gonna have another drink. Go to bed.
Boom. Another Blue Moon agave nectar ale.
It's fancy.
I don't know. I don't. A-G-A-V-E.
Yeah, agave.
No, I think it means agave nectar.
Oh, like in Blue Moon, agave.
Blue Moon agave nectar ale to somebody.
It sounds like I gave it like herpes or something.
It agave the nectar ale.
I heard about that. I had to get cream to clear that out.
That's all right. They'll do a commercial about it, and you'll look very happy.
Being in a, I love those. Being in a tub together.
I love the herpes cream commercials where people ride a bike and they're or through the park and they look really mm-hmm. happy, and it's like, oh, that's what I need to get herpes to get happy.
I need to, and then I'm driving a convertible, and I'll be in the wind will be blowing through my hair.
Oh, I need to be middle aged. But back to the collaboration mm-hmm. piece. Today we met with the comedy troupe, and I was in a room with probably 15 people. I only know one of them,
okay.
Jason, and I don't know him very well. I know Jason from
stuff. Yeah,
just mutual friends.
In the people that don't know Jason, we went to high school with Jason,
right?
And he was older than us. Like he was maybe like
six. No, years not even. Older.
He's younger than my brother. And my brother's 5 years.
Oh,
older
okay. Than
me. So like he was like three years four. Older than us. Maybe four.
That
like
sounds that. Right. Anyways. Yeah. See, I don't even know, but he was he. So I went there, and what happens is at these types of things, you get a group of 15 people who all know each other really well. And they've all collaborated on different things in lacrosse. They've done some performance things in the past, but they've never done the idea is that the hint that I got is they've never tried to do a comedy troupe. They've just done performances. I think this is the group that did like locally, they performed like the Rocky Horror Picture Show or something like that. You know what I mean? But, nothing, so what happens is everyone sits around for an hour or two or three drinking, and then they just start talking and people start riffing and joking. And, but they all know each other, and I don't know anybody. And that to me, I don't know, I'm sure it's hard for everybody, but it was really hard. Like being in a room with people that I don't know. And the idea of you all being here is that you're all funny. Supposedly someone thought you were funny and invited you, so now you have to prove yourself to these other people who are funny, and I have no idea what to say. People are like making jokes and riffing with each other, and I'm like, okay, I'd rather just sip on my beer and just do the informational meeting. And I have a couple of conversations with some people, but there were like two or three dudes who were really rude. Like I started talking with them, a group of two or three guys, and then we make some jokes. I crack a joke off. You know how that goes. You get a group of three or four guys who are all kind of witty or whatever, and they'll crack jokes at each other. Whoops, fumble. And like at one point I had made a joke
I can't remember what it was, but I alluded to the idea of Jason Robertson's belly button being like a butthole or something. You know, so it kind of, the conversation went a million directions, and I got lashed from like five people that were in the in the group, and one guy looked at me and just rolled his eyes and shook his head no, like, holy shit, man, you just really judged me hard on a stupid conversation joke. And I'm just meeting, and it reinforced the fact that when you're in a setting with people you don't know, just shut the fuck up.
Well, I don't think so. No, I think you should do that. I mean, you still get the laugh from people, and it's just this one dude.
Right.
It's this one dude that's probably like gonna go home on the internet and like blog about like how someone didn't like his favorite episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and. You know, it's whatever. You know, it's fine. You gotta ignore those dudes.
You know, what got me though is that like that guy was what you talked about earlier, the loudest guy in the room. Like he was the guy who controlled conversation, and he was funny. Like it kept. I mean, he was quick and he was spot on. I wouldn't say like it was like clever funny. It was like a Jim Carrey funny, you know, kind of that physical comedy, you know, quirkiness, using weird voices funny. But I got the feeling of like that guy really judged me hard on my stupid little witty joke about connecting a belly button to a butthole. Perhaps he was upset he did not come to that conclusion first.
Probably something like that.
So
I don't know. That's always the hard part when you get into these things is you run into people like that you know think they're they know everything about it, but it's whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah, I struggle with handling it. Like when I was driving home, I was dwelling on it. Like that fucker rolled his eyes at me. It's like, God, I had to tell myself, it's okay, Nick. He doesn't mean shit. Anyway.
So you're gonna write some stuff for that then, you think, or?
I have a couple things written, but I am hovering on the fence of like, God, I really am the new guy of a group of 15 people who know each other really well. How hard do I push it? How much do I sit back knowing that they're thinking that it's going to be multiple shows, but like I have a number of things written that that could be skits that aren't they wouldn't work on like the musical comedy. I couldn't record them and I couldn't perform them live because they require multiple people. So I thought that's part of the reason why I thought this would be great to go here and do this. I have some material I've written, but I don't know, like, when is the moment to push it? Part of me is like, well, you're all adults. You're all older. Just throw it on the table and see what happens. But I don't know.
I would probably do that. Just bring your stuff and like, hey, I got a couple of these things. Take a look. Tell me what you think. You know, if it's something that works, cool. If not, you know, or if you want to use a part of it, you know. I think that's the only way you can do that is, especially if they don't know you, you got to start showing your stuff, you know. Otherwise, they're just going to be the dude sitting there talking about belly buttons being assholes.
That's a good point. Well, other people roll their eyes at me. Yeah. It could be fun. We'll see where it goes. But next week, we're going to meet. And next Sunday is the day we throw shit on the table to see where we're at. It'll be interesting because it was in a room of 15 people. And it was a room of 15 people where that guy had to be the loudest in the room. But it was a room of 15 people where everybody, including myself, were the loud kid. You know what I mean? The one that had the person that has to be heard. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's always a weird. I've never been in a room like that where that was the feeling where somebody says something and there's 14 other people that have some type of witty retort to what you just said because you said the word. You know, you said something that's somewhat funny.
Welcome and to Theater Club.
That was pretty much. But I've never performed theater stuff, so not really.
I don't know why you never did.
So
Like, we were, you know.
You want to get into what? That one? Oh, the, well, I because I was a
bro. You're...
I was kind of a bro, man. I was all about sports. Do sports. I was going to be the athlete of the year. That's why. Can't waste my time on that shit.
Doing play acting?
If I could do it all over again, I so would. And it would be great. But you know what? Yeah. I didn't. And it's okay. What ifs. And now I'm trying to do it. And there you go. I wish I would have, but hey, man, you can't miss your second day of baseball practice. That's the most important practice. So
you gotta get to the batting cage. The batting cage.
I need to take 300 extra cuts. Yeah. Holy shit! It's funny because at the time it seems like, yeah, that's what you need to do, man. You need to be in the fucking cage. In hindsight, it's like, God, you're such an idiot. Why would you? There's so many amazing experiences you could have had. I don't want to play the oh, woulda, shoulda, coulda. Yeah. I don't like doing that. I like every choice I've made up to this point, but yeah, I definitely wish I would have stopped playing basketball, being the 5'10" fat white guy in the court, and tried forensics. I mean, I thought I was Scottie Pippen, but I wasn't.
Well, then there's me that tried to do everything that I could do, like.
Yes.
I wasn't good at anything.
Is there? Well, I remember you had your hand in every single pot that we had, like forensics. Yeah, Mitch is doing that. Fucking musical, Mitch is in that. Road choir, Mitch is in that. Fucking football, Mitch is doing.
Well, no,
that.
I didn't do football.
Jesus Christ.
For that.
You did, yeah. But you
well,
did.
That was middle school and high school, and I hated it. And I wasn't in the music. Or I almost got kicked out of the musical because, yeah, because I was in. Because well, it was the same time as football. Actually, Mrs. Lawson moved the musical after that just to stop the conflict because it wasn't just me; it was a couple other people too. They had the same problem because we were trying to be doing football and the musical at the same time, and it's like it was awful.
Right.
Yeah.
That is sick. That's what makes for a long day, man. I remember for Guys and Dolls, I had to take somebody's place. Because
you did take my place. I forgot about that.
They got a little happy with the barley pop when they were 15 at somebody's grandma's house.
It was Brian.
That's all right.
Robel.
Yeah. Brett and Robles. Yeah.
It was his grandma's house.
Hey, I do have something I remember from 2 months ago. You told me to look up. I knew I heard the name Maria Bamford before. Yes. And I have seen some of her stuff. I don't know why. I completely had a brain fart when you said her name. I should have known. She's so brilliant. But I watched start to finish that. Was it her Christmas special that she just filmed on her couch? And it was really. I wanted to give you my feedback of what I thought it was, but it's like she has that great high energy feel to her. You know what I mean? Like there's that physical comedy, but yet that the witty timing to it. She reminds me a lot, and you could disagree with this. She reminds me a lot of a guy like Brian Regan. You ever watch Brian Regan?
Yes.
The epitome of hyperbole.
Yeah.
Where he kind of sways back and forth between high energy and screaming. She doesn't really do that, but then slowing it down and being kind of calm and almost like lulling the audience into a calmness and then like speeding up his tempo to deliver a punchline and just hammering it home with some physical weird comedy thing. But she reminded me a lot of Brian Regan, but I love the fact, what I love the most is her random jumps in the story. Like she'll be talking and then she'll just like have this weird moment where she looks away and she jumps to something completely different, like people usually do when they're thinking.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right.
Because you know, like right now your mind is jumping a million different places while I'm talking about Maria Bamford. And I feel like she delivers that in her comedy. She'll she'll be saying something, and all of a sudden she'll start talking about where she's.
Yeah.
I can't think of any examples because it's been so long ago. I'm just reading the notes I wrote, but I feel like she's riffing with herself. Like she says something, and then she's riffing off of what she said to herself instead of an audience member.
And the thing that I know, the thing that I always liked about her is her impressions. And it's not really even her impressions because it's supposed to be her family, so we don't know what her family sounds like. But it's like her, the characters of her family or whatever. Like her doing her mom, it's just like so crazy. Especially if you don't like watch her say it, if you just like listen to her, it sounds like a completely different person talking at that time. Like it's so,
yeah,
so crazy.
She is, you know, sometimes when I listen to her talk, I feel like I'm watching myself when I'm alone in the car.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that.
But if you were to categorize her under the, like, you know, they have loose definitions of stand-up comic. And I wrote a couple down, like, they have the one-liner stand-up comic, the Mitch Hedbergs, the Stephen Wright, the Rodney Dangerfield, the Dimitri Martins, the storytellers. The you know, the Jim Brewer, the Eddie Murphy, the observational stuff. The long story, sorry, the short stories and the long stories. There's the character stand-up who, like last time when we talked, I said I liked Larry the Cable Guy. And I like Larry, and I want to say something as a footnote to that. I like Larry the Cable Guy the same way I like Miller Lite beer. I don't like Miller Lite beer unless I'm done mowing the lawn and I'm tired and it's a hot day.
Fair enough.
Yeah, does that make sense?
That's the same way I'm Corona.
Okay, there you go. He's your Corona. Once in a while, and he gets me. Anyway. Okay.
No. I'm not judging you. I'm trying to think of something similar. I guess like music and stuff like that. I'm very similar. Like.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
I can.
Do you have a guilty pleasure of music? Come on. You have something always. That you're like, I'm not telling anyone.
I purposely tell people. I have no shame. I have no shame when it comes to that. I actually really like... what's that girl's name? Carly... Whatever.
Carly Rae Jepsen. Yeah,
Call Me Maybe. I can listen to that song all day. I love that song. Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
It's so good.
Well, the good thing is, if you turn the radio on, you can hear it all day. I don't listen to the
radio, though.
Because it's on every 10 minutes.
I don't listen to the radio that often, though. You know, and I'm not trying to be like, I don't own a TV. I hate those people. But... every time I hear that song, I'm like, I do like this song. You know, it's like a very, like, kind of, like, pounding.
Okay. did you see when she was on Jimmy Fallon?
And that was the one that got version that got me. That was like when I heard her do that, and I'm just like, this is so good. And you just have all the roots behind that her, was just like just playing little toy flutes.
And the tiny little xylophones, the toy xylophones, ding 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 ding. Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah, that was the version that got me.
My guilty pleasure in music, and I am doubly guilty of this, is that I like Nickelback.
What? Really? I'm not judging you. We're in a safe place right now. We're in a safe place. It's okay. I just didn't expect it. I didn't see you knock me out. You were like a big floppy dick hit me in the side of the face.
Well, I don't like all Nickelback. I like the first three albums. Their first album is called fucking Nickelback first album. And the second album is called The State. And that had Leader of Men on it. And then the third one is called Silver Side Up. I really like those three albums. I think it's before, but what happened is the fourth album has like a combination of a song from all three of the first albums, and then every album after that progressively gets worse. Like it gets to a point where it's like you just redid a song from the third album and just changed the lyrics. Like music, they've done things on YouTube where they've like put a song on top of another song, and they've adjusted the tempo slightly to make sure mm-hmm. they line up, but they almost sound mm-hmm. identical. It's almost sickening how after Silver Side Up, here I am justifying fucking Nickelback. But what's even worse is that I am the first person in a conversation to fucking hate on Nickelback. Like, I am the first person to make fun of them, even though I like them.
Is it? Do you think it's because you enjoyed the first couple albums so much that they that like now that they're just kind of doing the same thing over and over again, you're just like, oh, like.
I think that's part of it. I think another part of it is that it's what's culturally relevant is to pick on Nickelback. And it's kind of funny.
Well, I mean, because I'll admit, like, I liked, like, the first, like, yeah. Smash Mouth album. Like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't bad. It was different. It was something new. And then but then all of a sudden it just became, like, you know, these are the days. Fan. Like, you know, I can't do a really good impression of that dude, but.
No, try again.
I'm trying. Wait, have you ever heard These Are the Daves? Like, I think, or is that what it's called?
No,
what's his name from David Lee Roth? Have you ever heard the Running with the Devil? Just the vocal, vocal track of Running with the Devil.
Okay, I have.
That
is great.
There's also just the vocal track of the dude from Smash Mouth with one of their like newer songs, and it's just awful. It's just terrible. And someone really? Took that and the David Lee Roth track and put them together and made a song out of it. And it's so good. It's so funny.
Wow, what a juxtaposition of two entirely different. Oh my man, that's great. I gotta check that one out. I gotta write that one down.
I think it's called These Are the Daves. Because like the song from Smash Mouth, like These Are the Days. And so it was.
You know, I was talking to our buddy Joe mm-hmm. recently, and he was talking about the band Korn mm-hmm. and how, like, early Korn, their music is about the pain of growing up in the inner mm-hmm. city and substance abuse and all these things that all these problems that real people mm-hmm. have.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, things people can relate to. And Korn music for the last 10 years has been about, oh man, struggling with success. You know, oh man, it's so hard being yep. rich. I can't think of any Korn songs in the last 10 years because I haven't. Yeah. I'm not a big Korn fan, but he kind of made a good point. It's like, yeah, like at some point, those people have nothing to relate to the common yeah. person with. At some point in their life, they've said everything they needed to say. And there's nothing else in their life that they can relate yep. to you. It's just, you know, I have lots of money and being on the road is really hard on me because I make millions of dollars. Was, and it's like nobody
that can was the same thing that. With me and Everclear. Everclear, by far, like mm-hmm. through high school, probably one of my top five bands that I dug, like easily. Mm-hmm. But if you know about the band Everclear, the lead singer, it was the first two albums were all about his addiction to heroin. Like, he was a heroin addict, got over it, and then started Everclear. And all of the songs were about him, you know, getting over this and dealing with that. And then, so the first two albums were that. The third album was, like, you know, him dealing with being poor and coming, you know, trying to get his life back in order. So those first three albums are great because it's all about, you know, this kind of personal life story. And then, as his life mm-hmm. got better, he started just making these terrible albums. They're like, after that third album, they're just awful and they're really bad. And I remember, like, one of the last times I listened, I was like, oh, a new Everclear album's out. I'm going to listen to the song from it. I listened to it and it was something about, like, about soccer moms or something like that. And I'm just like, oh, he wrote Christ. A really terrible album, but that means he's okay. That means he's doing well. Like he's got a good life. He's doing okay. He's writing terrible music. I'm happy that he's writing terrible music because he's doing he's okay.
that it sounds a lot like Scott Weiland of Stone Temple Pilots. Yeah. You know, what every time they take the drugs away from him, I shouldn't say that, whenever he sobers up, he writes an album with a band that's just absolutely terrible. And then he strings out and he writes something that's absolutely amazing. And then so
has he done anything lately? I haven't listened to anything lately.
Oh yes, STP recorded in 2000. They have a new album in 2011. Sure. 2 years ago, but it's pretty good. If this were 1996, it would be a great. I mean, it would do really well. I shouldn't say it would be a great. I like it a lot. It would be a really good Stone Temple Pilots album in 1996. The problem is, it's 2000. It was 2011 when it came out, and grunge was like dead 15 years ago. Back so, around. You know,
it's going to be that time where it's retro.
Yeah, grunge is retro. Unreal shit that we went to high school with retro.
Yeah,
31. That's sweet.
Shit, I forgot what I was gonna say. Oh, well.
That's all right. We have so much stuff to talk about. This is great. Whatever you want. You know, we have about 5 or 6 minutes left. I had this idea for a game like 4 months ago because I thought, gosh, maybe it'd be fun. You know what Pete Holmes does, like those fun, he does like the lookup games.
Or fake.
You know, and the lookup and laugh games, the fake laugh games, we should come up with something, but we should both come up with some ideas for games to play, and then we'll see if one sticks.
What do you think? I'm down.
Okay. All right. So I have a game I came up with, and it's called Who Said It? Ann Coulter or Hitler?
All right.
I got some things written down. Right? Okay. We need to execute people to physically intimidate.
I'm going to go with Hitler on that one.
Ann Coulter. Ah, 0 for 1, sir. Next one. Here we go. I have a couple good ones. This should be obvious. We just want Jews to be perfected.
Oh, I assume that's Hitler.
That was Ann Coulter too. I know. Isn't that awesome? Okay, here we go. Another one. Here we go. God gave us Earth. We have dominion over it. He said, "Take it, rape it. It's yours." Mm.
Well, the last two were Ann Coulter. I have a feeling this one's Hitler. Hitler. I'm going with Hitler.
This one's also Ann Coulter! Yes! All right.
Please tell me I have more.
Okay, more. Okay. As a Christian, I have no duty to allow myself to be cheated, but I have the duty to fight for truth and justice.
I'm just going to assume with the whole Christian quote that it's Ann Coulter.
That was
serious? Are you fucking serious?
Yes. God damn it. 0 for 4.
God damn it.
Here we go. Another one. We should invade countries, kill their leaders, and convert them to Christianity.
Now I'm confused.
I know.
Hitler?
That was Ann Coulter. Dude, 0 for 5.
Just proving I don't know the difference between Hitler and Ann Coulter.
I don't think... That's what I was hoping to get, like, 2 out of 5. Okay, that's all the good ones I have. I have one that, never mind. Anyway, that concludes our episode of, was it Hitler or Ann Coulter? The theme from MASH. Of the theme from MASH.
Did you know most TV sitcoms like songs from like the 60s, 70s, even 80s. Even though they don't have lyrics in them, they actually had lyrics written to them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The whole reason is that if the song got popular enough that they could release it as a single on the radio. So they were all written mm-hmm. with the idea of having lyrics to them. Like Bewitched, for instance, has like a whole like it's like Bewitched, Bewitched, oh you just got bewitched. Like, it's like it has a whole like dialogue with it. Yeah.
Oh.
Just because if it got popular, they would put it on the radio with the lyrics to it.
Yeah. Nice. That would be a hell of a job writing like theme songs for bands. What do you know, like, what do you do once you've written a theme song, like the theme song from MASH? You are the theme song from MASH guy, and you've now written a song that everybody knows, and that's kind of it. Like, you're sitting in your house right now, and that's all you have to your credit, and money's going to be pouring in, kind of. Like, what do you do with the rest of your life?
Well,
I'm the theme from MASH guy. These are my kids. The theme from MASH guy kids.
Well, that's what About a Boy is like, about. About a Boy, that? It was a movie a couple of years ago, but then it's also a book by the guy that wrote High Fidelity. Also wrote About a Boy. Same guy that wrote that. But the whole story is about this dude whose father writes a famous Christmas song. That gets played every Christmas. So he, and then his father passed away, so he inherited it from him, and he basically doesn't have to work at all because he just lives off of these royalty checks that he gets from this song. And so it's this whole thing about like, what do you do when you don't have to work? And so it's like him like going, like he like,
right.
He segments his day into like chunks so he has like something to do and things like that.
Well, that's the list. Yeah, About a Boy?
Hugh Grant.
Oh, is that the one where he's like charmingly befuddled?
No, it's a good movie. And then there's like, I can't remember the kid's name, but it was like his first movie. But now he's like kind of a bigger actor. No, I think. If I remember correctly. No, anyways.
Kind of a bigger actor. Yeah. Macaulay Culkin?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got it. Nail it right in the head. You're done. Yeah.
Perfect. He's the answer to everything. Yeah, he's the answer. Yeah. So on that note, we should end the podcast. Macaulay Culkin, man. Here's the Macaulay Culkin end. Ready?
Best way to end the podcast is with a visual joke. Are we done? Are we done? All right, yeah. All right, later, dum-dums. Bye.
Trout sniffers. Night of the living dum-dums. Night of the living dum-dums. Night of the living.